Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Raptor Queens podcast, the first ever all-women podcast covering the Toronto Raptors. My name is Sarah Khalil, and I'm here today with my other Queens of the North, Essie Magic. Give a little wave. And Sonali Sharma. This is the first time that ever we've recorded in video and decided to release the video recording. So this is the first time any of you have ever seen our faces. Welcome. It's nice to see you, even though we're not obviously seeing you, you're seeing us. But in any event, it's a new format. We're trying it out this week. We hope you like it. And just happy to have you here. For this week, we've got a few different topics. Obviously, we're covering the Raptors because that's what we do. And this year has obviously been a really, really fun year. So we're going to talk about the moments this year that were actually no fun at all. So we're going to talk about the five worst Raptors moments, and we'll get to that in just a minute. We've also got our regular tea time segment, what's going on with the Raptors this week. The NBA is reopening practice facilities. We've got takes on that. And finally, episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance aired this week. We got to see some the very competitive side of Jordan. We got to see some interesting takes on Michael Jordan's fall from grace, if you will, and we've got some conversation about that as well. So we're happy that you're here. Again, thanks for being here, and let's dive right in. So let's start with, like I was saying, it's a fun season, but we've got some moments this season that were not fun. And so what we're going to talk about first is our five worst moments of the season. And I'm going to start with Sonali. Why don't you take us away? Tell us one of your moments.
Okay, so because Essie thought that I was going to say everything to do with injuries, so I had to really like think about these moments and not take the easy route out. I would say my sort of top disappointment was our Christmas game loss to the Boston Celtics, because that was just such a huge deal for the Raptors, and we got to play at home and we lost to the Celtics. And so that was a major disappointment for me.
Essie, I'm guessing that was on your list too. Am I right?
That was definitely on my list. That was one of my biggest disappointments of the season, because we hadn't had a Christmas game since Vince Carter played in Toronto, which is a long time ago. I believe it was 2001 and against the Knicks. And we coincidentally, we lost that game too. But so it was like nationally televised. And it was also around the time where a lot of the American media still hadn't been taking us seriously yet. And so it was just the worst timing to do that. It was just, you know, and then to make matters like bittersweet, then we went and blew out Boston the next game. And although I was happy about that, it was like, well, why couldn't we do that the last game, or at least make it competitive a little, you know? So that was very disappointing. So yeah, that was on my list too.
Yeah, me too. No surprise there. That was an unanimously bad Raptors moment this season, with just all the hype, all the expectations, all of the fans so excited. And just like, you know, I think that probably for me, the worst part of that game wasn't even that we lost. It was just that it was such a flat game. And it wasn't representative of the Raptors' heart. And that to me was the most disappointing part of it.
It was hard to watch.
Yeah, it really was. Okay, so Essie, now we'll go to you. Tell us your second most disappointing moment or least fun moment of the season.
So my second most disappointing moment is when we got blown out by the Clippers when they came back to Toronto. It was a nationally televised game. It was Kawhi's first return. And the thing is, it just made it look like he made the right decision to leave. And so that's why I didn't like it. I was like, just great. Now the moment when we should be proving that, oh, he shouldn't have left, that we totally prove he should have left. So that was one of my moments. And again, that game was nationally televised. And for me, like, I know everyone was excited because of the Kawhi ring and everything, but the moment we got blown out, it was like, I didn't even care about that anymore. I was just like, oh my gosh. You know, that just wipes that away for me.
Oh, that is also on my list. Sonali, is it on your list as well?
It was also on my list.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those bummers because, I don't know, I liken it to if you run into an ex and you want to look better than they do. And in this case, you just showed up and you're in your sweaty outfit and your hair is not done or whatever it is, and it's just kind of embarrassing. Yeah, I didn't like it. Okay, so I'm gonna actually say my third and fourth moments together because they kind of go together, and it was two games. The first game was the January 7th game, a two-point loss against the Portland Trailblazers. And then there was a game, the January 12th game against San Antonio, which was a one-point loss. Okay, and the San Antonio loss was, I just want to set the stage here. This was the last loss before our 15-game win streak. And we were up by so much in the fourth quarter. And then in the fourth quarter, San Antonio went on a 27-4 run and came back and won the game by 1 point. And there was just like, there's just a couple moments in here that I really want to highlight. First, it was Norman Pascal's return. So it was like the super exciting game and it was so fun to watch. They were playing fantastic. And the game is tied at 100 and Pascal goes to take a free throw. And he takes his free throw and he misses. And it was so like the whole audience, the stands were like, oh, we're so excited. And then they're just like, clunk. Just like it was all on the broadcast, this really loud, disappointed aw moment. And then the last shot of the game, Pascal was going and he went to take the game-winning shot and just missed wildly. I don't know if you guys had that game on your list or if it was there, but do you remember the game?
I do, but it wasn't on my list though. But a good yeah. Good choice.
Ugh, yeah, it was just such a bummer of a game. And then the game before that, the Portland game, the other one that I was mentioning, this was an awkward game. I mean, in crunch time, we had Brissett and Pat McCaw on the floor, which is not typically your crunch time crew, but just that's the nature of the injuries of for the Raptors at the time. And the Raptors led until 39 seconds of the game, they were leading, and then they tied it at 39 seconds off this like illegal screen and a shot from almost half court. Like Portland hit this 3-point shot from almost half court off an illegal screen to tie the game. And then, and then they lost by one because McCaw turned it over. Like he had the ball in crunch time and he goes to pass to Kyle and he throws it out of bounds. And I just hated that. I just hated that game so much. So there, those are my next two.
Wasn't it Carmelo too who hit that jumper at the end? That was like vintage Carmelo. And then of course the American media went crazy over it and we're just like, damn it, we lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a crusher. Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually have this tweet that says, it's like with, I don't know, right before McCaw turned over, it says, why does McCaw have the ball in crunch time? And that's when he turned it over. Anyway. Okay. So was that game on either of your lists?
No.
None
of those were on my list.
Okay. Okay. Well, then let's go back to you, Sonali. What's one of the, you can go three and four or number three, whatever you want to do.
Yeah. So my other one was, my number three was the loss to Philly back in December. That game was just such a horrendous game. I think we had 17 turnovers in that game and our shooting was 43.7 from the floor. And that was the game that Freddie VanVleet had his knee injury. So sorry, Essie, I had to mention one of the injuries, but it was that game prior to that that we had shut Joel Embiid out. And even though he only shot, I think he had like 10 points, it was just one of those games where I was super disappointed that we had a loss to Philly. I just hate losing to Philly in general.
Fair enough.
But that one was a bit of a like, why is this happening? And then that was one of those games where I think even the media was starting to say, you know, the struggle is going to be real for the Raptors, like when it comes to playing competitive teams in terms of clinching a spot in the Eastern Conference. So yeah, I hated that game.
I feel like that game was a reminder that like the East is still, well, at that time, that the East was still pretty level. Like other than the Bucks, there was no other team that was running away with it or really dominant. And I wanted the Raptors to be a dominant team. And it just kind of reminded us that, nope, they're just like the others. At least at that moment, that's how I felt.
That's so true.
Yeah, that narrative kind of continued throughout as well. Essie, what was your number three?
So my number three was against the Atlanta Hawks in, I believe it was January 20, and it was when they almost came back when they did the press, and we looked like a bunch of amateurs trying to handle their press. It was like we'd never seen a press before ever. It was so bad. And I believe we were up 112-91, and then they got it to within two. And it was really close. And what was funny was that it was the bench who actually grew our lead on them. And so then when the press started coming in, they couldn't handle it. And I think Nick Nurse wanted some more ball handlers in. Then he brought back in Pascal and Fred, only for Pascal to just turn the ball over to when he came in. So that game was just like, oh my gosh. That game really brought out some of my worries about the playoffs. Like, oh my gosh, like what are we gonna do in the playoffs if we get a press? Is it gonna be like this? And it was just the Atlanta Hawks. It wasn't even that great of a team. So I was just like, oh. So for me, that was one of our worst moments and showed a glaring weakness.
Yes, I remember that game now that you mentioned it. That was like in the same streak of games that I was talking about, where there was a whole bunch of leads that we had that were getting lost in the fourth quarter, and the games were getting way closer than they should have been. I think at that point, even in one of our podcasts, I had mentioned, oh, I wonder what's going on with like the mindset of this team that in the fourth quarter, they're losing leads like this. And then somebody asked Nick about it as well. And Nick Nurse was like, no, I'm not worried. And I was like, should you be though? But anyway, I do remember that. Okay, so that was your third one. Am I right, Essie?
Yeah, that was my number three.
Okay, what was your number four?
Because you did two.
I did three and four together.
Okay, so my number four is when we played Miami. I believe this was the first time we played Miami, and it was just like raining threes. I don't know if you guys remember where they were just killing us and we were leaving them open, and I think we were gambling and they were making them like their 3-point shots. And then what made the matter even worse is we did end up coming back, which was great. And the game went to overtime, only for Jimmy Butler to completely take over in overtime. And we had no answer. And for me, this game, well, first of all, they're a rival in our conference. And then number two, this game just really reminded me of my biggest fear of the Raptors, which is they don't have a closer, which is something I've brought up multiple times throughout the season. This game brought that fear out like full-fledged, like just completely full stop. Now I'm really worried about this because I just saw the way that Jimmy Butler took over and I was like, oh gosh, who's gonna answer on our side? And it was already like a worry I had before. So, I mean, later on in the season, we saw that we started seeing some more closing or better closing from Kyle, and, you know, Pascal had a couple moments as well, but
Norm.
But yeah, so that game for me was just like, it just was not good the way they were just making those threes. And then to see Jimmy Butler take over, it just felt like a preview of what could happen in the playoffs. So yeah, so that was one of the worst moments on my list.
Okay. And I'm trying to remember, is that the same game that was that incredibly low scoring game between Miami and Toronto where they scored like 80 points each?
No, that was the second game.
That was the second game.
Low though of 76 points and they scored 84 points. I did contemplate choosing that game, but then I felt like because we still held them to 84 points, I was like, okay, even though we scored so low, it was like we still played decent defense or whichever. So, but this game was the one where they shot like 40% from three, yeah, or 39% from three, and we shot 25% from three. So it was not that game, but that game was almost on the list as well.
Yeah. Well, and I remember in both of those games thinking, oh, Miami's clearly one of the teams in the NBA that can actually match the Raptors for defensive intensity and defensive disruption and be able to throw an otherwise good offense off their game. And that was to me when Miami became a legitimate threat in the East, was watching their ability to play defense.
Yeah, that's
true. Yeah. So, okay. Okay, Sonali, over to you for your number four.
So my number four was the loss against the Bucks back in February. There was just so much drama and hype around that game, and Drake with the trolling Giannis and the whole WWE belt and and all that kind of stuff. And although, you know, similar to your point, Essie, it wasn't like a blowout game. The score was 108-97, and we just couldn't stop Giannis. And yeah, I mean, I was really looking forward to our second matchup with him, which we haven't got yet, but that was a disappointing game for me for that reason. And also, like, I think I was sitting in a bar when you could sit in a bar. Remember those days? And some guy next to me, and I was wearing my Raptors jacket, and some guy sitting next to me was just like, they're never going to beat Giannis. And I think I just was like, so like, home, like in the rain, and it was raining that night too. It was just, everything was just flared up from that.
This is really interesting, like to kind of categorize our moments. So obviously there's our first two moments, which were just games that we were really hyped for and then lost like in a really flat, boring blowout kind of way. But then Essie, your moments are the moments that were like, oh, this bodes poorly for the playoffs. Sonali, yours are the ones, oh, our conference rivals, we've lost to them. And mine are those 1 or 2 point losses. That's really interesting how we've each got our own take on what constitutes the worst moment. Okay, so let's see moment number 5 from each of us and see, do we keep the pattern? Does it break? What will we learn about each of the Raptor Queens from our number 5 moment? Sonali, take us away.
Wait, thank you. Did you do your number 4?
Yeah, my number 3 and 4 went together. I did the Trailblazers loss and the San Antonio loss.
Oh, okay.
And they happened really closely together, and they were like 1 point each.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sorry if that was confusing to any of the listeners. And Essie, sorry for confusing you.
It's okay. I'm always confused in life.
Okay. COVID brain. That's what I call it.
No, that's
everything you guys know. But yeah, sorry. Sonali, do your thing. Go ahead.
So I think I've revealed myself here. I'm a bit of a like sore loser. So my 5th moment was our loss to the Brooklyn Nets, which ended our 15 win streak.
Boo. I'm booing the loss, not booing you.
Made me so sad because I just wanted to keep riding that wave. And Marc Gasol was missing from that game. And it just brought something really fun to an end. And I didn't like it. Boo.
Fair enough. Yeah. I kind of forgot about that. I don't know how you can forget about the end of a winning streak like that, but the fact that it was against Brooklyn, was it in Brooklyn or in Toronto?
I think it was in Brooklyn because they
were
scarves. Didn't they wear the scarves?
Yeah.
Plain, they wore the scarves there.
Yeah. So like not only was it against Brooklyn, it was on Brooklyn's court and that awful color. And to me, that just makes it so much worse. This is the worst color in the NBA.
Yeah, and also, like, right now, I'm just, like, hating on Brooklyn even more because, you know, Kevin Durant. So.
I know, all the rumors that, oh, he could, wasn't it, like, 2 months ago or 6 weeks ago when the quarantine started, how they said that, oh, there's no way he would come back, you know, for the playoffs. And now we're hearing, oh, he might come back for the playoffs. So yeah, that's another aside.
Well, conversation.
I just do think it's important to highlight that even before COVID started, I was like, guys, what if Kevin Durant comes back and we're matched against Brooklyn? So I have foreseen this possibility long before COVID happened. Just so everyone knows.
Yeah, you know what I'm worried about too? It was like, we might not be the same so even if we, like, that's like the worst possible time to play against them, like against him, because it's like, we're still gonna have to warm up coming back from the, you know.
Yep, and then we'd have to add another top 5 worst moment would be if the Raptors lost, and then everyone would be like, see, if you played for Golden State, then Raptors wouldn't win the championship, and that would be the worst thing.
Yeah, that's the thing that I don't want to hear. And then I don't want the headlines to be like, the Raptors' Achilles heel was Kevin Durant.
Man, we should write for the NBA. This whole little drama, this projected drama that we have put together is actually quite lovely. So Yeah. Or we should write for a soap opera. Either works. So now, Essie, what is your number five?
So my number five is, I did include one injury moment on my list, which I don't know how Sonali feels about that, because I was like, don't choose injuries on my list, because I felt like it would be obvious that those are like, we had so many injuries. But so mine is when Norman Powell got injured right after being named Player of the Week, and he was averaging 20 plus points in a row for the previous five games. So he was on a roll. And I think he had a career high that week, 37 points. And it was just terrible timing. I mean, it just would so happen that that would be the last game we would play, because then we went, the NBA got suspended. But it just like, it just kind of ruined, like had that not happened, it was just ruining his total fairy tale moment. And he was on such a roll. So that was my choice of my final one.
Oh, Essie, how interesting that you should say that, because my final moment is also a Norm Powell injury, but it was the second injury that he had when he hurt his finger. And he didn't even, we didn't even know what happened, because he didn't get taken out during the game, but later found out, oh no, now he's out again. And I wonder what it is, like, of all the players who have sustained injuries, the ones that to me stand out and hurt the most were Norm's. And I think it's just got to be because he was playing so well. And every time it just seemed to be such a gut punch.
And you know what? It was like he had already suffered enough. Like prior to this third injury, he had already had two injury stints where he missed like 9 to 10 games or 8 to 10 games. And so this was going to be the third one again. So it was just like, man, can't he catch a break? You know, he was having really good numbers. Even some people were starting to say he should be up for most improved player and things like that. So
exactly.
Worst timing. And then we all know the league got postponed or whatever. But had that not happened, it would have just felt really bad.
Yeah. No, I agree with that one. So Norm, if you're listening, all we really want is for you to stay healthy and ball out, because you're a rock star. And Sonali bought your Understand the Grind gear this week. Am I right, Sonali?
Yeah, I can't wait. I am supporting the UTG brand label.
Ooh, that's awesome.
We're not sponsored by them yet, but who knows, maybe after this.
Hey, Norm, if you're listening, email us at raptorqueenspodcast@gmail.com. We'll sponsor your product.
We'll wear it if he sends us stuff.
That's right. All right, so sorry, Essie, what'd you say?
No, I'd say because we understand the grind.
That's all. Right.
Oh, let me ask you guys a question, because all this talk about like the players, you know, needing time to warm up and like the facilities coming back. Out of the players on the Raptors, which players do you think, or player do you think, is most likely to come back the least ready to play?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Do you have an answer already, Essie?
I want to hear your answers first, though. I asked the question, you give me the answer.
Okay, well, my answer is definitely not Serge, because he's so public about his workout. In it, like, part of me wants to say Kyle, only because, I actually don't think so. I think he's too much of a leader to actually come back not ready. But when they won the championship and Serge was doing his little interviews, like, what are you going to eat? What are you looking forward to eating the most? And Kyle just said, literally, he just named off all these foods. And so I think Kyle just really loves food so much. And so maybe if he's eating like home cooking, that he'd be like, I just have an extra serving. I don't know. I can just imagine him loving food so much.
You're saying he's gonna come back overweight or out of
Well, I don't actually think so, because I don't think that's the type of leader he is. But if it wasn't for the fact that he has to lead this team, then I think that's what would happen. That's what would happen.
Sonali, who would you choose?
I'm gonna say OG. No? I feel like OG is just like playing video games all day long.
I could see that. Yep.
And I think he's just like banking or riding on his like youth, and it's gonna like hit him in the face when he's like, I should have been on that Peloton bike and I should have been doing this.
I don't know though. He's like made of brick. So do you think that bricks need to stay in shape or are they just brick-like all the time?
I think it'll impact him a little. Like, I don't know. I just want to say OG. Because okay. I didn't want to say Kyle because that was my automatic go-to.
Interesting. Okay, if Allison was here, she'd be all over us. She'd be so mad that we said anything bad about Kyle. But also, on the video game thing, possibly Chris Boucher, because he for sure is playing video games.
He looks really jacked. I saw something about him on IG. Like, he actually has, like, put on muscle. I don't know if that was, like, fake news, but I look like it was real.
Oh, wow.
That he's been trying to put on muscle every summer. So I know he did last summer, he gained some weight, and he said his goal is to gain even more weight this upcoming offseason. So maybe he'd use this opportunity to, like, oh, well, now's a chance to put on more weight, you know, after experiencing being thrown around like a rag doll sometimes on the court this season. Just sometimes. Most of the time he actually holds his own, but you never know what his thought process was there.
Yeah. Ooh, interesting. Okay, what's yours, Usy? Who do you think?
So I think it's going to be Marc Gasol, because I think back to...
You're such a Marc Gasol hater.
I know this sounds bad after what I said about him last week, but or the week before, I should say. But the way he started this season in general, do you guys remember how bad he was?
Yeah, but he had just played for Team Spain and was exhausted. This is literally opposite. He has rest instead of competition.
I don't know if it was all competition that caused that. I just think he wasn't
also drinking entire bottles of wine.
He was back in Spain, and I know that he, you know, loved to drink. So I just feel I could just like envision that the exact same thing happening, where he comes back missing every shot. You know, is, you know, he already has problems with jumping. So it's just I just don't see him being. I seem likely to be the most that's not ready. Sorry.
Interesting. I love how right away I jumped in. I'm like, you're a Marc Gasol hater. Maybe that's not fair.
He just instantly falls on my list of things.
I guess you have a point. Like, he is older and he has to work harder, and gravity is just so much closer to him now than it was before, right? So...
Okay, that's an interesting little side question. Thanks for just springing that on us, Essie. That was really fun. All right, so speaking of fun, it is time to turn this podcast over to Sonali and get some tea on our Raptors team. So what you got for us, Sonali?
Yeah, as per usual, there's always so much happening in the world of social media. I think the biggest story right now that's been going on, and you guys have probably heard this, is poor Giannis's social media got hacked into. And so there was a series of tweets that was sent out from his account that ranged from pretty horrible things, like something horrible about Kobe Bryant. There was one that sort of referenced possibly King James LeBron having a hitman put out on for Giannis. And so his brother was pretty quick, Costas, to apologize and say, you know, somebody's hacked into his social media account. So I think it's like on brand for Giannis that something like this would happen. And I'm curious to hear what the two of you thought about it, because he's so goofy and innocent, and it just, out of all the players in the league, like, it just makes sense that his social media would be hacked.
I actually didn't hear the two that you mentioned. I heard the one about him going to Golden State and how he wants Steph Curry's wife. That's the two I heard about.
There was a tweet that said, like, I love Steph's wife. Like, it, I mean, mentioning her name.
Way, but that's the gist.
There was a series of them. I saw a bunch of screenshots of the actual tweets that were sent out and then deleted, obviously. But quite devastating and just an annoyance for him, and kind of.
The thing that stood out to me the most is, well, I guess there was two things. First of all, I wonder if I could just imagine him being the type of person that uses the same password for everything. So like maybe it was really easy, because didn't his bank account also get hacked?
Yeah, I don't know that one, but it's probably like, I love Nick Nurse or something. It's
that's, yes, I wish I was a raptor. but the thing that actually stood out to me the most about it was his apology after and how sincere and heartfelt it was. And it just made me think he's such a wholesome guy. I really like Giannis. I think he's just like, I don't know. I think he's sincere and kind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think this is also a testament to how bored people are right now. Someone's like, there's no NBA, so I'm going to hack Giannis and create some news.
Absolutely.
Good point.
For all we know, it was Kevin Durant.
Oh, and he's like, now I'll get my revenge on Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors. I'll use my burner account.
Oh, boy.
Now that is an interesting theory. What else do you have, Sonali?
So what was the other thing? Oh yeah, so Serge had his How Talented Are You episode drop today on his IGTV, and it was pretty exciting because his special guest was Bianca Andreescu, and she's just such a cool young lady and just so grounded and so positive, and the whole episode today was really good, and it was really uplifting and, you know, just great to see all these talented people. So I think he's into his kind of he's sort of petering off into the next stage of the talent competition, and other than that, we have some news around Freddie VanVleet. I don't know if we wanted to talk about that. He's been in the news quite a bit this week. Were we going to talk about that in the tea or?
Yeah, go for it.
I think Essie has a lot to say about this too. But he's been in the media a lot. So he's from a place called Rockford, Illinois, that's been severely hit by the economic crunch of this pandemic, and so there's been a lot of news around the efforts he's been making to help his community. And then also with that comes his sort of positioning in terms of his contract with the Raptors and his free agency, and so money. And I think the bigger sort of question right now that's been going on, and I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about this, is just the sort of flexibility now that a lot of the players, or some of the players, may be open to in terms of negotiating possibly shorter term contracts and that kind of thing. So lots of buzz around Freddie and what his potential next moves are going to be, and if the pandemic is going to affect these players' contracts.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that stuck out for me. Not that I don't care about the the philanthropic efforts he's done. I just didn't hear about those parts. But how he revealed that prior to all this, I think this was with, was it City TV or Sportsnet or one of those interviews he did, where he revealed that he, you know, prior to this, he wouldn't have been okay with any sort of short-term contract. So although that's kind of easy to guess, at this point he's looking to lock in, like it makes sense from a logical perspective that he's looking to lock in a long-term, you know, big deal, but actually hearing from his mouth, like him say it, that, you know, that wouldn't have been a go for him. It just kind of lets the imagination run wild of, oh, maybe he would have seriously left, you know, if the Raptors didn't offer him, you know, what he's looking for. So that was pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head when you hear it from the actual players, from their voice and from their mouths, it becomes a bit more scarier. And I think he also, you know, there was some conversation around, like, will we even have a season? Like, will there be playoffs? And Freddie seems to be pretty pessimistic about that outcome in terms of, you know, public health versus playing and just the role that the NBA has in terms of, you know, being at the forefront of being a leader in terms of pushing forward the public health mandate as a sports league and franchise and all the franchises. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of scared. And then also, how does that impact these guys if they're not playing in the playoffs, right?
Yeah, this is definitely a major unknown. When will sports come back? Are we even assuming something that sports will come back at all? I don't know. I don't know how this is going to go over the next few years. I think that the Maple Leafs Sports and Entertainment, the owner of the Toronto Raptors, may be in a better position than a lot of the other franchises. Like, the Toronto Raptors have a lot of money behind them. So that might be something that over the long run works out to the Toronto Raptors' benefits, the types of deals, the flexibility that the organization has to take advantage of any flexibility that the players may have. So I don't know. I guess I'm curious about this. I mean, they're worth $2.25 billion. I think that's more than, I think that's in the top 10 for what they're worth or what they can afford. Anyway,
I think that also too, it also does work against the players in the sense that like the salary cap is predicted to probably come down a bit. It could, like, this, the loss of revenue that the NBA is making right now is likely to cause the cap to come down. Maybe not this particular season, because obviously it's already passed, but the next one or even after. So that could be something that does impact a lot of teams in terms of them willing to, you know, it's almost like the ball is back in the organization's court instead of the player's court. Whereas before, someone like Freddie had all the leverage, you know, prior to this. But now it's, you know, he's going to have to, and he knows it, he's going to have to be a bit more flexible. So if you want Toronto.
That's an interesting point. All right. So next on our topic is the NBA possibly reopening. So that's a good segue. We're just talking about Freddie and his pessimism. So what has happened this week is that the NBA has basically said that up to four players can be allowed in a practice facility at any one time. The Raptors have limited it to one player plus one coach at any one time with no overlap between groupings. And that is the latest news that we have.
Raptors have to wear masks too.
Mm-hmm. The Raptors have to wear masks unless they're on the court. That's another Raptors directive.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. My personal take on this is, I'm like, okay, they're doing their best to give the players access to resources to stay fit and stay prepared in the event that this comes back. I don't think it means anything one way or another about whether the NBA does come back for playoffs this season, in my opinion. I think that this is just, it's aligned with kind of the other reopenings that are happening in the economy, at least in Toronto. Things are starting to reopen. Places of work potentially reopening under certain circumstances. So to me, it doesn't seem like a NBA specific direction. So to me, this doesn't mean anything. That's my take. Sonali, what were your thoughts on it? Or Essie, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I think I, like, similar to what you're saying, Sarah, I think it's just I don't think it means anything yet either. And it's just a phase of moving to whatever the next phase is, you know, in terms of opening up businesses. So
I think for me, what actually stands out more than that is, I don't know if you guys heard, and I don't know if it was Woj or Windhorst who said this, but I read it somewhere that Adam Silver, the commissioner, is willing to take this season all the way into December or something like that. I don't know if you guys saw that, but I read that, yeah, he's willing to go even further than like September, October to continue this season, to finish out the season. So that was really what stuck out to me, is like, okay, there is hope, because if he's willing to, like, that's a serious pushback of the next season. If he's willing to push the next season that far back and go into December even, then that is a sign that this actually could happen. We'll likely still be without fans because most cities are not allowing big, you know, associations of people. But that for me stuck out more than this facility opening or minor facility opening story.
Hmm. Interesting. I didn't hear anything about it.
Yeah, I think I just read it yesterday or something, but it just shows that, like, if they're willing to go that far, then that shows how badly they want to complete this last season.
I'm really curious about, and I kind of wonder why, like, why not just start the season over? Or not start the season over, why not just start a new season if you're all the way into December?
I think that there's a lot of pressure from certain players who might have a lot of influence.
LeBron James,
yeah. They don't want, like, I know the Lakers definitely do not want it to be canceled. I imagine the Clippers wouldn't want it to be canceled either, because they only signed 2-year deals with Kawhi and Paul George, so they're on a bit of a time gap as well. I don't see the Milwaukee Bucks wanting it to cancel because Giannis's contract is coming up. I think there's so many factors of why, like, the top playoff teams would not want this to be canceled. You know what I mean? I mean, it benefits teams like Golden State Warriors and, you know, the Brooklyn Nets even, or teams that are already losing. But for even the Raptors, I mean, to just throw away this comeback season that happened, you know, it'd be a shame, because they were out to prove themselves and they were showing that they were actually going to be able to potentially defend their title. I know nobody was using that term at the beginning of the season, but, you know, even for the Raptors, it would be a shame if they couldn't continue. So I think that there is definitely some pressure from the more powerful teams, I guess you can call them. I mean, they're obviously not literally more powerful, but just in theory, you know, I think that they would want to continue, and I wouldn't be surprised if the players are really pushing, or some of the players are really pushing to, you know, not cancel it, or for the NBA to do everything they can to not cancel it. I mean, we already saw LeBron's tweet, and they had a player association call, I think it was 2 days ago as well. So yeah, I think that there's definitely pressure to continue. And then all the lost revenue, if they don't play something, all the revenue that they would have made from the broadcasting of all the games gone. This is in addition to the revenue of, you know, the tickets, which would have been lost no matter what, but the ones for the broadcasting, which is where, if you guys don't know at home, that's where the NBA makes most of their money, is that's a big deal to cancel that. So I could see them trying to do everything they can to make it happen.
Yeah, I will say kudos to Adam Silver for at least considering it. Like, one of the things that I appreciate is that he's not living under the assumption that if it doesn't start by September, it simply won't start at all. And so being willing to, you know, challenge some of the things that might seem obvious, and I don't know, be open-minded about how this solution could play out. I will give him credit for that.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I like the way he's been handling it.
Okay. So let's then move into our last topic of the podcast. We're going to talk about this week's episodes of The Last Dance, episode 5 and episode 6. And so for those of you that may not know, this is part of the 10-part documentary series featuring that covers Michael Jordan with the Chicago Bulls, with a storytelling focus on the last season of the 1997-98 season of the Chicago Bulls. These last two episodes to me really highlighted two things. They kind of focused on Michael Jordan as a competitive person, and not just a competitive player, but like as a competitive person, and how that competition maybe even went too far. And it also focused on, you know, how he went from kind of an idol or a hero with a campaign like Be Like Mike, everyone wanted to be like Mike, to being somebody who was framed, at least in the media, as potentially having a gambling problem, because the day before a playoff game, he went to Atlanta. Was it Atlanta? And I don't know. He went to a city with casinos and he gambled till 2:30 or something like that. So there was quite a media fallout after that. Sonali, what stood out to you this week about these episodes?
Oh, wow. So many things. I feel like there's just so much in the two episodes when they drop at once. I actually had to go back and watch both of the episodes again, because there was just so much. But for me, what stood out the most, I think, was, the question that I'm struggling with, and I don't know if the two of you have been struggling with this as well too, is sort of Michael Jordan as an artist and Michael Jordan as just being a basketball player versus Michael Jordan being, you know, the Be Like Mike brand and what that means. And like, do players have to be sort of advocates or, you know, social justice warriors or, you know, these beacon citizens of the world? I mean, he was clearly very unapologetic about, you know, I was just a basketball player and it was all about competition. It was all about the sport. And you see people, you know, comment about this. You know, we saw sort of Barack Obama and his sort of point on that, that fellow that was, I forget what his name was, that was up for an election in a very racially driven political campaign where the other guy was clearly very anti-Black American. And so that question to me is still kind of lingering. It's like, how much, you know, are sports players and also people who are making, you know, millions and millions of dollars and they have this brand, are they to be held to a higher moral standard? And I don't know the answer to that. And yeah, and then to me, what stood out the most was just how poorly, like just how mean Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan were to Toni Kukoc in the matchup against Croatia, and just knowing the political background of Croatia, and then this poor little guy who was just, you know, trying to play for his like country's team, and just the way they were just such bullies, like these cool guys who were like, you know, 11 players that like 11 of the hottest players in the world, and like we're gonna go and crush this guy. Like that was, it was just, it was really like, to me, a testament of like boys will always be boys.
Yeah, I so for me this week there were a couple moments, but they kind of just seemed like bridge episodes a little bit. They weren't as like shocking as some of the previous episodes. It was just kind of those moments that you have to talk about, if that makes sense, with mm-hmm. the exception of the beginning part with Kobe, which to me, as soon as I saw Kobe, I was like, oh my gosh, that just brought me back all over again. So that definitely stood out for sure, seeing Kobe Bryant, the interview he did for the documentary. But in terms of the other issues, like, they essentially, I kind of, I hate to say the word assume, because they say you shouldn't assume, but there was nothing that was revealed about Michael Jordan that I didn't already guess to be true. You know what I mean? Because he's a competitor, and competitors usually have a bit of swagger to them, some arrogance to them. And so I wasn't really surprised in terms of, you know, how he treated people. To me, that's typically how you see competitors be. I guess the stuff about Toni Kukoc definitely was interesting. But again, I'm not really that surprised either, because I feel like those are the types of things always happen behind the scenes. I mean, even in like regular life, I don't know about you, but it kind of reminds me of like, there was this one job I had where like somebody literally tried to get me fired because they just didn't like me. He was threatened by me because I just, this new person coming in has all these ideas and doesn't, you know, go automatically with what he wants. So similar to kind of Toni Kukoc, the new person coming in. And like, so that kind of thing happens in every day. Well, maybe just because I'm in LA and, you know, LA is a city of sharks or whatever. But to me, that didn't really stand out as anything that, you know, shocking. In terms of his neutral stance with the Black candidate, I wasn't surprised by that either, because I already knew that about him. I remember some time ago, maybe like 5 years ago, it was a big deal because Michael Jordan finally came out and spoke against racial inequality in the States. And the reason why it was a big deal when he did that was because he would never do that before. So I wasn't surprised by that at all. That it's just stuff that I already knew about him, that he always had this neutral stance. And yeah, I like I said, this week kind of felt more like a bridge week to me, just to, you know, stuff you have to talk about to keep the storyline going. And I should also point to viewers, okay, you're hearing this, that newer episodes would have come out, but we're recording this before the newer episodes came out. Sorry, just wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, so the thing that bothered me about Toni Kukoc was that it was not about Toni Kukoc at all. That was completely about going after, I'm blanking on the name. Crow. The manager. Yeah, Jerry Krause. It was completely about going after Jerry Krause and trying to prove a point to him. And so there's something about that I find immature. And maybe true, boys will be boys. I don't know if I'm just now gender stereotyping. I totally am. But yeah, so that to me, I don't know. I feel like because of the motivation behind it kind of crossed the line. Like if you just want to beat somebody because you're playing an honest competitive game, I think that's different than I'm actually interested in using you as the point I'm going to prove against someone else. And so to me, there's like, I guess, an energetic difference about that that just feels off to me. And I don't like that.
It just, to me, there was this sort of testament of like a lack of emotional intelligence on the part of Scotty and Michael. And what I found really interesting is that in spite of all of this, Tony still, he became a really like beloved member of the team. And he, you know, I think when you come from a place of like, it really showed me like what a team is. And so a team is not one player, even though Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan. But even in like previous episodes, when we talk about the whole sort of camaraderie between Rodman and Scotty and Michael, it's a team is made with lots of different strengths and weaknesses. And so that was an interesting takeaway for me for sure. With respect to that piece and Tony in particular. And I agree with you that it was just, yeah, I don't want to gender stereotype, but the way that he, and I think even Michael said, like the way that Tony was presented to them, it just shows that there was just such ineffective communication between management and these two players in particular. And you could just see like everyone was reading into everything.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know what, though? I'm not surprised that it turned out fine in the end, because it kind of reminds me of something that CJ Miles, who used to play for the Raptors, said. I don't remember when he said it. I think it was shortly after the Raptors won the championship, where he said that when DeMar was traded, they were all devastated. Like, it was this big, awkward thing, but then you have this new guy coming in who you can't show him that, you know, you're upset. You have to embrace him because then it could affect his play. You want him to play well for you. So yeah, of course, obviously Kawhi's a star player, so there's more on the line, but it just kind of reminds me of that thing that, okay, once you get into camp, it's time to get down to business. We got to play, we got to win. You know what I mean? So I'm not surprised that they kind of just, you know, let bygones be bygones and said, okay, you're here, we got to deal with you. Let's be a team, let's play, let's win type of thing.
Totally.
Yeah, so that's what that kind of reminds me of, and I'm not really surprised that it turned out fine. Sarah, you were going to say something, though?
Just to your point about it being, like, filler episodes, to me, like, what I walked away from with both of these episodes was just less about what's your opinion of Michael Jordan and more about, hey, we'd like you to give some thought about the treatment of stars. Mm-hmm. So I felt like it was meant to be a thought-provoking episode for the viewer. And so like, okay, how far do you think, how far is too far for you when it comes to competition? And then also how was the media fair on their portrayal of Michael Jordan with a gambling issue? Does he have to actually present himself as this perfect person with no vices? And to his point, like, was it like he goes gambling sometimes? Like, is that even a vice? And so I feel like it was actually a lot more about asking the viewer to ask themselves how they relate to these certain issues. And then from there, like, there are as many different viewpoints about Michael Jordan as there are people, because it ultimately comes down to how you feel about certain things and what your own line is personally. Totally. And that's what I got from this.
Yeah, and then this whole notion of, like, I mean, Adam Silver also, there was a line that he said in the episode, which was basically, you know, this Michael Jordan, the branding, Team USA, this dream team, is what made basketball essentially what it is today. And that, you know, basketball has become this huge component of pop culture. And it was really that era and that alpha personality that is Michael Jordan that took it to that next level. And there are a couple of, like, I have two other points. Like, one of them, going back to your point, Essie, about the acknowledgement of Kobe Bryant and just the impact that Michael Jordan had on his life. I think, you know, the quote that he said, which was, "What you get from me, you get from him." And that's exactly what he said about Michael Jordan and how Michael Jordan was a brother to him. And to me, like, I just, like, broke down and started crying in that moment, because it just, it not only was, like, devastatingly beautiful, but it also just showed that, you know, that sort of evolution of what we know now as the Mamba mentality from Kobe's brand, and, you know, that competition from MJ, like, these players worked so darn hard to be who they were. And that in itself is just, like, I don't know, I feel super inspired during COVID. I'm like, I don't have the same kind of, you know, acumen or that drive that they have, but it was just, it was really cool to see that, and to see Michael just kind of pushing against him, you know, here's 19-year-old Kobe, and Michael's like, "I've got tricks, and I'm gonna show you all my tricks, young boy," and Kobe not feeling threatened by that and feeling like this is an opportunity to learn from this master. And I just thought that was a really beautiful part of it too.
You know what too, also what makes it really nice is because we did hear at the memorial for Kobe, we saw MJ give that big speech where he really revealed and illustrated the true nature of their relationship, which for me was new. I didn't know a lot about that until Michael Jordan revealed that. So it was nice to actually get that chance to hear the other side from Kobe of that, because we, up until then, it was just, we only just found out, well, for me or a lot of people, we just found out from the memorial. So to be able to still get that chance to hear Kobe reciprocate that relationship, I thought that was really nice.
Yeah. And in a way, like, almost like a bit of closure around that.
Yeah. Yep.
The loss of Kobe. Right. So, Yeah.
Awesome. And what was the second point you wanted to mention, Sonali? This will wrap us up.
What was the second point I wanted to say? Oh, and just how brand driven Mike MJ was, and even that whole sort of, you know, the Team USA jerseys were sponsored by Reebok, and how he strategically put the American flag to cover that logo. And to me, that was wild. Like, I was like, what a brilliant like marketing savant he was. Like, he just knew his brand through and through, and he really honed in on that. And I thought that was brilliant.
It was a very smart way to get away with it. You know what I mean? It's almost like nobody would have known he even had a problem. Yeah. If he didn't say it, you know what I mean? Like, he just slyly put the flag there. So that was really interesting. It kind of reminds me of earlier this season when Kawhi won the MVP for the All-Star game. And I don't know if you guys seen the clip where he comes to the podium and there's a bottle of Gatorade and he's just like, "Not sponsored by Gatorade," and moves the bottle. Like, it's like the complete opposite of what...
Yeah.
Could have just picked up the bottle and moved it or something, or told someone to move before he sat down. But he, like, actually said it. Like, so it just complete contrast in terms of, you know, seeing how Michael Jordan just slyly put the flag there looking patriotic when he had, like, an ulterior motive.
And even the, like, commentators were like, in a patriotic move, he, like, takes the American flag. So he's, like, this American hero as well, too.
All right. Well, does anyone have any final thoughts on The Last Dance before we wrap up our episode for today?
No.
No? Sonali, you're good? All right. Well, in that case, we are going to, like I said, wrap it up. And I want to say thank you to all our viewers for being here. It's true that this time we actually have viewers. If you're one of our normal listeners and you don't usually listen on YouTube, this would be an awesome opportunity for you to check out our YouTube channel. all of our channels are the same handle. It's at Raptor Queens. And hold on, just let me consult my list. You should follow us at Twitter, Buzzsprout, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, and Instagram at Raptor Queens. We're very happy to have you each and every week. Be sure to tell your friends. Be sure to comment. Be sure to leave a 5-star rating. Tell your friends. Oh, I said that already? Okay, well, I really mean it. And happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers out there, including the NBA moms. And yeah, we're just really happy to have you all with us. Go Raptors, go.
And I wanted to add too, you made a really good point for the listeners who aren't used to seeing our faces. So if you're listening on audio right now, if you go to YouTube, you will see our faces for the first time in the history of the Raptor Queens podcast. So this was a special episode where we decided to show our faces on camera so you can see all our fresh reactions and our match a face to a laugh. So yeah, I just wanted to point that out to the listeners at home.
That's right. Okay, everyone, stay Raptors fans, and we'll see you all next week. Goodbye.